York by Terry Deary. Read by A Horrible Histories book read by Vanna Vance. With frightful fold-out map. The Ring of Pain comes mainly from the Dane. Illustrated by Mike Phillips. Introduction. Go to York today and you will feel quite safe. Except you may be trampled by terrible tourists in summer that are finished off by floods in winter. Or worse, swamped by sightseers in any season. Gee, Hank, I never knew York was so much like Venice. But York hasn't always been such a safe place. The ancient Brigantes would bash you if you weren't careful. Then along came the ruthless Romans to rampage all over. The smashing Saxons had no sooner settled than along came the vicious Vikings to eviscerate everyone in sight. The Normans were even nastier when they arrived. But peace finally settled on the city, and a man with a scythe wandered quietly through the streets. Heavy rains and melting snow made the River Ouse rise 7 meters and flood 800 homes in York in 1982. It wasn't the first time. Flood defenses were built, costing £8 million, so it wouldn't happen again. In November 2000, it happened again, the worst floods for 400 years. Then again in January 2005. No wonder it's called the most regular flooded city in Britain. Allow me to introduce the Black Death. The Tudors were terrible torturers, and the Stuarts tore York's Guy Fawkes to pieces. The Georgians strung up Dick Turpin to stop him robbing you of your horse, your sheep, your purse, or your life. And the Victorians were simply vicious, with at least one savage schoolteacher having a cupboard full of kids' corpses. Gee, Hank, I never knew York was so much like a horror movie. So forget the cute and the quaint city and listen to tales of the horrible human history. York timeline. AD 71. Rotten Roman army arrives and sets up a camp so it can bash the British Brigantes tribe. They call it Ebo Rackham because no one had thought of calling it York yet. 410. The Romans go home. Along come the Angles and the Saxons from Germany to settle. They capture York. King Arthur takes it back, but the legendary lord disappears. I love bashing the British. It's no yoke. 600s. Saxon lord Edwin brings Christianity to the place. By 627, there's a little wooden church on the spot where the cathedral stands today. I love bashing the British. This is a new angle. 700s. York's name is now Eofrewick. It is top town in the north. The trouble is that we'll make it top target when those vicious Vikings arrive. 866. The vicious Vikings are here, led by Ivar the Boneless. He shares out the lands with his brother, King Halfdan. They call the place Jorvik, but if you say Jorvik, you'll see the city has almost decided what to call itself. 2,000 people live there, about the number who go to see York City play football these days. Knock, knock, who's there? Ivar. Ivar who? Ivar Big Sword that I'll shove up your nose if you don't let me in. 867. Saxon King Iella tries to attack the Vikings at York. They capture him and execute him horribly. This is a horrible execution. I saw a nice one last week. 927. The Saxons can be as savage as the Vikings. King Æthelstan enters York and flattens the Viking fortress so they can't cause him any more trouble. He shares out the Viking loot among his army. Nice man. He orders his own brother to be drowned at sea. Maybe not so nice. 954. Eric Bloodaxe is the last Viking ruler of York. History books say he is driven out by King Edred of Wessex. Anyway, he is later murdered on a trip 70 miles north. Yorkshire is now part of England and ruled by kings in the south. Still is. Why couldn't he rock? 1016. The English Uhtred pops across from Northumberland to see Viking King Canute at Wighill near York and make peace, but he never gets there. He is ambushed by his old enemy, Thorbrand. Canute probably set up the slaughter. 1066. King Harold fights a bitter battle near York, Stamford Bridge, and defeats the Viking leader Hardrada. He comes to York to have a party, then gets the bad news. The Normans have landed on the south coast. Harold will lose that battle. We have to march to Hastings. We haven't had our jelly and ice cream yet. 1069. William the Conqueror has arrived with his Normans and they're here to stay. They built a couple of wooden castles in York, but the Saxons massacre the Norman defenders. The Normans take a vicious revenge. They are also here to slay. They rob the churches and the cathedral while they are in an avenging mood. King William spends the winter in York. Why are they all called Norman? 1190. The Jewish people are being attacked by the people of York. They flee to the castle, but their enemies surround it. The Jews set fire to it, and many kill themselves rather than surrender. The ones who surrender are murdered anyway. We surrender and die, or burn and die. Could we hide? 1339. Around 13,000 people are living in York until along comes the Black Death, the plague that wipes out half the people in the city. Even by the year 1500, there are still only 10,000 in the city. York. 1400s. The wool business is moving to other places. York is losing people and becoming poorer. It's a worry. I'm losing sleep. I'm losing sheep. 1453 to 1487. The Wars of the Roses don't help the poor people of York. The York family is battling the Lancaster family, but the people of York support the Lancaster side. Got that? York family King Edward IV gets upset. He rules York harshly. 1472. The new cathedral, York Minster, is finally finished in 1372. It's only taken them 250 years. Here's the bill. 1533. King Henry VIII founds the Church of England, with himself as head, and begins closing down the monasteries. Another of York's big businesses, religion, is going to suffer. But York stays England's number two city, though life is made worse by plagues, again, in 1550, 1604, 1631, and 1635. How's business? Don't ask. 1603. King James makes the Council of the North, posh law courts, a strong force in York. The city is on its way back up. This town's going up. What, further north? 1634. The English Civil War, Parliament, and the Roundhead soldiers against King Charles and his Cavalier soldiers. The Roundheads surround the city. Prince Rupert fights them outside the city at Marston Moor. He loses and York surrenders. 1719. York is becoming quite a popular place with the posh. The coach to London takes 4 days, but the journey time will be down to 20 hours by the 1830s if the roads get better. How long have you had a beard? Since I left York. 1739. Highwayman Dick Turpin is hanged in York for horse stealing. 1832. No more plague, but instead the people of York are struck down by cholera. They turn blue and die. It comes from drinking filthy water and living in crowded slums. It's back in 1839. 1837. For a bit of variety, there's an attack of typhus, a disease spread by lice, in 1837, which kills 403 people. The good news is you don't have cholera. Hooray! 1839. George Hudson is a ruthless businessman and a bit of a crook, but he brings the railway to York. Lots of jobs and new businesses like chocolate factories. How sweet. 1839. Cholera is back. 1870. A really, really cruel new law says there has to be a school for the poor children of York. No, no, not the poor children of York. The poor children of York. The ones with no money. Poor children. What chocolate factories melt in the summer? Now we're the poor, poor children of York. Poor us. Bad brigands. The brigands people lived in the York area, farming and fighting, shepherding and slaughtering their neighbors. Then the Romans arrived. In AD 51, Queen Cartamandua of the Brigands had a couple of problems. The first problem was her horrible husband, Venutius. The king didn't like the Romans. He was going to make trouble. There'd be battles and bloodshed. She rather liked the invaders. Anyway, she was bored with Venutius. He had a gorgeous chariot driver called Velocatus, and she really fancied him. Her second problem was that the Romans had landed in the south of England and defeated the Brit leader, Caractacus. Caractacus had been forced to run away. And where'd he run? You guessed it, to Cartamandua. Give me shelter, please! All right, then. But what if her Roman friends found out? They'd be upset. They'd probably throw her off the throne. There was only one thing to do. Hand Caractacus over to the Romans. And that's what she did. The rat. Venutius was furious, of course, and they were separated. She didn't mind that because she was free to marry the lovely Velocatus. But she did mind when Venutius attacked her and drove her out of Yorkshire in AD 69. She turned to her Roman friends for help, and in AD 71, they set up a fortress in the heart of Yorkshire, on a spot we now call York. The Roman writer Tacitus said, "Venutius got the throne. We got the fighting." But Tacitus was happy to report his brave Roman lads won in the end. Petilius was the governor of Britain who built a Roman army fortress at York. He at once struck terror into their hearts by attacking the Brigands. After a series of battles, some quite bloody, Petilius ruled over most of the region. We don't know what happened to crafty Cartamandua and her hunky chariot driver. Maybe they rode off into the sunset on a chariot made for two. So that's how York came to be built, all because the British queen had a row with her husband. Violent Vikings. The Vikings came along and called the city Jorvik, which is a bit of a cheek. The nasty Norsemen ruled York on and off for about 200 years. They are still remembered today, 1,000 years after they left. What was so horrible about their memory? Ayala, two boneless fellows. In 866, the Viking brothers Ivar the Boneless and Halfdan captured York. It wasn't very well defended. Of course, Vikings usually took towns to have a good time robbing and killing, but this time it was personal. They wanted revenge. The stories say that Lord Iella of Northumbria had killed their father Ragnar. They dropped him into a pit full of snakes who bit him to death. He didn't taste very nice. So when Iella and his brother attacked York, Ivar and Halfdan captured Iella alive. They wanted him to suffer a much nastier death. 1. We turn Iella on his face and hold him down. 2. We rip off his shirt and carefully mark where his ribs join the spine. 3. Now we use a knife to carefully cut the ribs off the spine. 4. We reach inside his back and pull out his lungs. 4. 5. They look a bit like this. 6. We spread them across his back like the wings of an eagle. 7. This is what we Vikings call the blood eagle. And 8. Here's what I made earlier, but I blew up the balloons. There's a story that when William the Conqueror attacked the north, he found the grave of Ivar the Boneless. He had the corpse dug up because he hated his Viking enemies so much. It was a spiteful and vengeful thing to do. Ivar, bone to pick with you. Funny. Did you know, Ivar was nicknamed the Boneless. One story says that Ivar had no bones because of a magical curse. Of course, anyone without bones would collapse like a jelly. What's his nickname? Ivar the Puddle. Did you also know, in the 1980s, two historians discovered a male skeleton in a Viking graveyard at Repton, Derbyshire. It was 9 feet long, 2.75 meters. They believed the body was that of Ivar the Boneless. But if Ivar was boneless, he wouldn't have a skeleton. Headman Uhtred. If you had gone to York in 1006, you'd have seen the old walls were decorated with heads. They were put there by the warrior chief Uhtred. Uhtred was fighting for Saxon King Ethelred and set off to defeat the Scots. Not only did he beat them, but he beheaded them too. You can imagine the wives of the Scottish warriors became Scottish warriors. You're looking for your lost husband? Aye, he said he was going to head off for York. Uhtred was a head man in the north, in more ways than one. Then he married Sigurd of York and made a promise. I promise to fight your dad's enemies, especially that Viking Thorbrand. Oh yes, especially that Viking Thorbrand. Big mistake. Thorbrand was a powerful Viking leader, but Uhtred failed to keep his promise to kill Thorbrand. Even bigger mistake. Good to know who your enemies are, I'll remember. Uhtred went on to marry the daughter of King Ethelred. Her name was Ealfgifu. I promised to fight your dad's enemies, especially that Canute. Oh yes, especially Canute. In 1016, Viking King Canute invaded England and trusty Uhtred said, I promised to fight Ealfgifu's dad's enemies. Big mistake. Then King Ethelred died. Ealfgifu's dad, being dead, no longer had any enemies, so Uhtred could make peace with Canute. Crafty Canute sent for Uhtred. He told him to come to his camp at Wighill, New York. But Canute let Thorbrand know of the plan. Uhtred agreed to come to Canute's camp. Not only was this the biggest mistake of his life, it was also his last. Thorbrand lay in wait and killed old enemy Uhtred before he got to Canute. I said I wouldn't forget. End of story? No. The Saxons had this idea called a food. If you kill a man, then that man's family will try to kill you. What happened next? Uhtred's son, Ealdred, killed Thorbrand, so Thorbrand's son, Carl, killed Ealdred, so Ealdred's grandson killed Carl's sons, and he killed Carl's grandsons. And the feud ended. There was no one in Thorbrand's family left alive to carry it on. So I won in the end. Go to hell. Foul Fulfard. In 1066, William the Conqueror landed at Hastings and beat the English King Harold. Everyone who has suffered a history lesson has been told that. Though you may have forgotten, but the first great battle of 1066 was at Fulfard on the south edge of York. A Viking invasion smashed the English. If there had been newspapers in 1066, the York headlines would have made rotten reading. York Sun, Wednesday, September 20th, 1066. Hooray for Hardrada! This evening, the Viking leader Hardrada is top man in Yorkshire. His knights, the Norwegian army, smashed the English earls at Fulford this afternoon, and I was there to see it. The English held the high ground while Hardrada defended a ditch by the river. The English couldn't be beaten if they stayed up there. But the valiant Viking Hardrada had a perfect plan. He sent out a weak force to defend the eastern end of the ditch. The English thought they would win easily, so they left the hill and attacked. When they were in the ditch, Hardrada struck. The ditch had been damp at the start of the day. Soon it was deep in English blood. The battlefield had been marshy, but the Vikings now kept their feet dry. They simply used the English corpses like stepping stones. Tired but happy, Hardrada told me, I do not plan to enter the city of York. I do not want it looted. I will take hostages from the city. If the English try to attack again, I will massacre the hostages. And the victorious Viking means it. I know, I am one of the hostages. York has also delivered 150 children to the Norsemen. So let's welcome our Viking victors. Our reporter, happy to greet Hardrada. Hardrada had beaten the northern army, but King Harold arrived with an army from the south and caught the Vikings napping. Yes, really. The Vikings were dozing in the sun at Stamford Bridge, 10 miles from Fulford, northeast of York. Harold attacked before most Vikings could get their weapons or armor. After a bitter battle, Harold won. The reporter would have had a different story on that day. Hero Harold from Hurlbur Hardrada. The vicious Vikings have been vanquished, and the folk of York say good riddance to the ruthless raiders. Here today at Stamford Bridge, hopeless Hardrada died with thousands of his awful army when our king's awesome army nobbled the Norse nasties. There are two famous stories about the battle that everyone in York should know. One, a lone Viking hero blocked a bridge to stop the English crossing. He gave his friends time to gather some weapons. He killed lots of the English before they killed him with a trick. The English sent a boat under the bridge, pushed a pike through the planks, and stabbed him from below. He's a pain in the bum. He soon will be. Two, Harald offered part of his kingdom to one of the raiders, his brother Tostig. But Tostig wanted land for Hardrada too. Harald answered, I will give him just 7 feet of English land, enough to bury him. And Harald kept his word. Hardrada died with an arrow in the throat. Tostig was hacked to death when he refused to surrender. But the battles at Fulford and Stamford Bridge had killed some of England's best warriors. They were to round to fight William at Hastings a week later. So William and his Normans won. You could say, the English lost the Battle of Hastings in York. Durr. Nasty Normans. The Normans arrived, and the people of York were not happy to see them. It's as if a stranger moved into your street and said, I am your new leader. Pay me taxes and do what I say, or I'll kill you. Would you welcome them? A York writer in 1069 said, the city of York was full of revolt. The people had no respect for the archbishop. Many men lived in tents. They refused to sleep in houses, so they should become soft. The Normans called them wild men. Most history books forget about the Vikings once the Normans arrived in 1066. But the Vikings did not give up after being beaten in York. They were back in 1069 to try to capture York. Of course, the Normans knew the Vikings would have the help of the English rebels in the city. They hate us, you know. The Vikings, the English, they all hate us. Still, the Normans were safe inside their castle walls. They're hiding in their houses, waiting for us to come out. They're creeping closer, I tell you, creeping closer. So what do? We set fire to the city. They did a good job of the burning. You could say they did too good a job. Setting fire to the houses outside the castle was supposed to give the men in the castle a clear view. Actually, we, destroyed a large part of the city. Sooner or later, the Normans had to leave the castle. We rode out to attack the enemy. What did the Vikings do? They massacred us. It was a nutty Norman mistake. The remaining Normans tried to escape through a gate in the castle. Walt Hoof, the Earl of Northumberland, was waiting for them with his long axe. He was said to have chopped 100 Normans. Can you believe that? A Norman gets to the gate and says, 99 of my mates have been hacked down. Maybe I'll be lucky. No, they wouldn't run into a one-man massacre. The Normans were desperate but not daft. Somebody must have been fibbing. They may have run from the castle, but they would not let themselves be chopped down one at a time by an axing earl. Sagas were written by about wonderful Walfjall's axe attack. Sagas are poems telling the story of a great hero. They're a bit long and written in Old English, so here's a new saga written by the Horrible History's very own captive poet. Walfjall's Saga. Wally stands outside the door and waves his mighty axe. Each time a Norman sticks his head out, Walfjall, he hacks. He strikes the Normans in the neck, he strikes with awful glee. He strikes and strikes without a break, he doesn't stop for tea. 10 Norman heads roll on the ground, 10 bodies fall down flop. Now Walfjall is warming up, he doesn't want to stop. And still they come and still he hacks, he doesn't stop for tea. Then like a Yorkshire cricketer, he hits his century. Come out, he cries, come out and die, I'll kill you all stone dead. The Normans don't reply, they can't, each one has lost his head. At last he lays his long axe down with blood all slippery. That's the word of them, he sighs and laughs, now I can stop for tea. William the Conqueror heard about the massacre of his men. He marched north for revenge, and the Vikings sailed off to safety. Wise move, lads. William was in a bad mood. The monk Odoricus Vitalis wrote, William fell on the English and spared no man. Many were captured, more killed, and the rest put to flight. William himself went on to comb forests and distant mountains, stopping at nothing to hunt out the enemy hidden there. He cut down many in his vengeance, destroyed the homes of others, and burned homes to ashes. Nowhere else had William shown such cruelty. In his fury, he punished the innocent with the guilty. He commanded that all crops and herds, food and belongings of every kind, should be brought together and burned to ashes. And so terrible a famine fell upon the humble and helpless people that more than 100,000 folk, young and old alike, died of hunger. There weren't enough people left to bury the dead. Corpses of humans and cattle lay in the fields till they rotted. The northern rebels were crushed. The Vikings still weren't quite finished. They were back in 1075 to rob the city, but the days of Viking York were over. Woeful walls. A city needs walls to keep out the nasty neighbors, a bit like you may need a garden fence. The Romans had a wooden fence and a ditch, feeble, so around AD 210 they put up stone walls. The Saxons didn't do a very good job of looking after them. When the Vikings arrived, a writer said, the walls were not strong or well built. New city walls were built between the 12:30s and the 13:30s. That's what you can see today. Soldiers guarded the walls and were harshly punished if they fell asleep. How were they punished? A. They had their eyes put out. B. They were hung in a basket over the castle moat. C. They were beaten with nettles. Answer B. The soldier was given a little food, water, and a knife, then dangled over the walls. When they'd had enough, they could cut the rope, drop into the moat, and get a cold bath. And a filthy bath, because the castle toilets emptied into the water. They were then banned for a year and a day from the castle. Why didn't we think of that? Awful archbishops. York has a huge cathedral known as York Minster. Very pretty. York Minster is second in the top 10 of British cathedrals. At least that's what the Christian Church said. It has its own archbishop, and you don't get much higher in the church than archbishop. Except God, of course. And God doesn't count because he doesn't go to church. The bad news for readers of horrible histories is that most of the archbishops of York have been pretty boring old blokes. Hardly anything horrible to say about these saintly souls. But here are a few foul facts our dirty detectives had dug up about some bad bishes. Seeing stars. Gerard was a bit of a troublemaker. He argued with his boss, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and with his boss's boss, the Pope. He wasn't popular with the people of York. Gerard's crime was to have a book on astrology. That is making horoscopes by looking at the stars. You will find a juicy bone tomorrow. What about today? If you want to read your horoscope, you just look in a newspaper. But there were no newspapers in 1108, so Gerard had a book that told him how to make up his own horoscopes. Some people believe this was a magic art. Well, it would be if it worked. Imagine if you could really see into the future. You could pop down to your local shop and get all the numbers right in tomorrow night's lottery. One evening, Gerard lay down with his astrology book under his pillow. The next morning, he was dead. The monks who found him were horrified. Ah, the magic book must have killed him. Do you think he saw it coming? Gerard had died on his way to a meeting in London, and the people of York said, "Serves you right." They also refused to bury him in the cathedral, pelted his coffin with stones on its way to the funeral, said he worked with the devil to make black magic. No hope for Scrope. Bad Bishop Scrope set up a rebellion against King Henry. He made a list of all the things he wanted the king to change. He set this list up all over York. We don't have a copy. It may have looked like this. York chocolate factories became famous for black magic, selling the chocolates of that name, not selling their souls to the devil. Did Archbishop Gerard of York give them the idea for this name? Dear citizen of York, please read this. If you don't know how to read, then get someone to teach you. I, Richard Scrope, Archbishop of York, want King Henry to give us less tax, the old royal family back on the throne, better government. If he doesn't, then we'll rebel. Let's show horrible Henry who counts in this kingdom. Power to the people, and the church, of course. Richard Scrope. Go, go, go with the battling bish. Archbishop Scrope found 9,000 armed men willing to march into battle with him.